Hi and welcome to the CDC Insight podcast. CDC is the UK's development finance institution and impact investor. And in this podcast series, we share some of the highlights from one of our recent Insight events. These events aim to share practical lessons on private sector investment and development based on our experiences, knowledge, and research. And joining us today, we have one of the pioneers of impact investing, Vineet Rai. Vineet is the founder and chairman of the Avishka Group, an impact investment platform that reaches millions of people across Asia and Africa. Vineet is joined a little later on in this discussion by Jen Braswell, who is the Director of Value Creation Strategies at CDC. This is the group that encompasses key impact areas, including gender and climate change. And Jen and Vineet are in conversation with your host for today, Colin Buckley, who is CDC's General Counsel and Head of External Relations.
Today, we have a rare opportunity to appreciate the wide scope of impact investing, especially in emerging markets. 20 years ago, a handful of visionaries began to push the concept of impact investing. Among them were Ronnie Cohen of Bridges Ventures, Jacqueline Novogratz of Acumen, and Vineet Rai, who set up Avishkar and who joins us today. We'll spend some time with Vineet tracing the arc of impact investing's growth, but we'll also bring the conversation up to date by looking at one of the current emerging lenses of impact investing. And Jen Braswell of CDC will join us for that portion, considering how gender equality has emerged as one of the hot focuses for impact investing. Introducing Vineet presents quite a challenge. You either go the long route, which would take us almost the entire time allotted, or you resolve to only hit the highlights. I've decided to just hit the highlights, Vineet. Suffice to say that Vineet is a pioneer in impact investing. He set up Avishkar as an impact fund manager 20 years ago. And today, Avishkar employs 5,000 employees and manages over $1 billion in assets. Vineet has been consulted by politicians like Prime Minister Modi, by international organizations such as the OECD and the United Nations, and his list of honors is long. But it includes the one that I pick out, being named Impact Investor of the Year by News Corp. So welcome, Vineet.
Thank you, Colin.
So let's go back to the start, 20 years ago. And I was struck by comments you made on an Indian podcast last year, that when you started this journey, impact investing wasn't even a term. And instead, you started with an aim to solve a particular issue about poverty and internal migration in India. And I'm wondering if you could go back and sort of just tell us that story of what brought you into impact investing.
So Colin, I'm a forester, and thank you for having me and giving that lovely introduction. I'm a forester by training, and so the fact that I'm in investing itself is a misnomer in that sense. I was in the forest, I was very happy, then I got married, my wife didn't find forest as enchanting, so I had to leave the forest, go to a management school, and then I joined, or probably set up India's first incubator in 1997. And my job was to convert farmers' ideas into businesses. In those 4 years of trying to convert farmers' ideas into business, there were two, three things I learned. The first thing I learned was entrepreneurship can make a significant difference, but it is not about the idea alone. It is about really building an entire ecosystem around the idea. And capital is important, but missing, especially capital that can take risk. And it is very, very critical to attract talent that are willing to work there. Now, I was talking about rural India. And so I set myself up to search for that capital that can solve this problem of capital not seeking risk, not going to rural India, and also trying to attract talent that will go there. So that's really what my journey was. And that's how I came to it. Of course, the term impact investing did not exist. At that point of time, neither I knew Jacqueline nor I knew Ronnie Cohen. On the paths over the last 20 years, of course, we have interacted significantly. But that's really the background.
So, I mean, if we thought about this in terms of impacts, because I want to go back to this ecosystem, and generally we think of the, you know, the inputs in a very simplistic model of being you have a business and then the capital is the input and then you have maybe management as an input. But your ecosystem contemplates a lot more inputs going into a successful business. So, I mean, we've got capital, we've got entrepreneurial spirit. We'll come back and talk about that. But what are the other pieces? I mean, is it advisory work? I mean, you know, some of those other inputs.
So, Colin, I think if you look at the group, the way the group has come through. So I started by, I realized very quickly and early that capital that can take risks. So Avishkar Capital, which is the impact investing arm, was critical. Then we built a company called Intellectual Capital. That is really what we realized is you need to actually identify entrepreneurs with bright ideas, and you have to groom them and coach them so that they can engage with investors. Remember, investors talk a very different language. And I learned very quickly that if you put a lot of investors and a lot of entrepreneurs in one room, the investors will come out saying, couldn't find the entrepreneur, and the entrepreneur will come out saying, I didn't find the investor. So it's not really about putting them in one place. It is making them speak the language that each one can understand. So the entrepreneur is always talking about solving a problem, doing something else, while the investor is looking at, can I get my money back? How do I get liquidity? What kind of IRRs, MOIC, et cetera? Very different languages. And we realize it is very difficult to teach the investor the language of the entrepreneur, but it is very easy to teach the entrepreneur the language of the investor. I have always believed that entrepreneurs are on a higher intellectual hierarchy than investors are. So it's easier to teach them to come down a little bit than take the investors up.
I'm curious about digging a little deeper in this, you know, the inability to communicate between entrepreneurs and let's say mainstream investors. Because I think it's very true that, you know, these markets, our markets are now flush with capital. And yet we're still struggling to see these kind of matches being made. Some of it is language, but investors also say that entrepreneurs are generally not large enough to invest in, and entrepreneurs lack the capital to sort of cross the divide to become large enough to invest in. So, I mean, how do we bridge this gap so that we can get the capital where it's needed?
So Colin, I think you have actually raised the most important challenge that everybody faces right now, and which is actually the investors have defined a risk-reward paradigm. And that risk-reward paradigm does not take into account a continuum. It has happened in the mainstream, so it's not true. It's not happened in the mainstream. The venture capital, private equity, bulge bracket investors, that has happened in an IPO. So there is actually an entire continuum that has developed, but that has been developed on the basis that the risk will deliver the kind. So venture capital fund will lose 80% of their capital, but 20% will give them maybe a 10x return or 5x return. That probability itself is quite exciting. And so capital has actually distributed. When it comes to impact investing, specifically when we are talking about entrepreneurs who are solving large complex social problems, the time it takes for them, because you are actually trying to build an enterprise in a broken ecosystem, very different from a Silicon Valley or a Bangalore ecosystem, where capital, talent, competitive entrepreneurship, liquidity, all stand shoulder to shoulder. When I go to a low-income state, there is no capital, there is no talent, there is an entrepreneur who's actually trying to solve a problem, they have challenges with the government, there's all kinds of challenges. The growth rate takes time to come through. And that requires patience. So I think it is less of a discussion about doing impact investing. Do I get low returns? It is actually about doing impact investing. Do you take longer time to generate returns? And as you know, IRR is a function of time. So if you are going to give a 6x return in 10 years' time, your IRR surely will be lower than giving it in 3 years' time. Now, somehow, unfortunately, we have not been able to still break through this conundrum that you can deliver significant returns in impact investing, but it takes just longer time. So you can get 6x, 7x, sometimes 20x also. It just takes longer time. And that would mean that IRR, which is a very time-dependent factor, may be lower, but the multiples could still be reasonable. And I think to some extent, we are proving it. But the problem that I foresee right now is there has been a migration towards what mainstream does, because every business creates impact. So it's easier for me to invest in a larger company, which is at late stage, where a mainstream investor wants to invest to generate return in a shorter period of time. then to actually go and do the painful work of identifying an entrepreneur at early stage and building a company. And this conflict is not going to go away in a hurry unless you can create perfect ecosystems, which, as you know, is a very long demanding challenge.
Yeah, I mean, you wrote an article about 10 years ago in The Guardian that kind of made the somewhat provocative, you know, claim that just the terms that we use, and the one you used there was social entrepreneur, but impact investing could be another one, we're inhibiting mainstream investing taking this on, that, you know, being a social entrepreneur might be seen as something that is not a normal investment. And you made the claim that social entrepreneurs are really nothing more than either high risk, early stage, and so forth. I'm curious, in the last 10 years, do you think that that's still a problem, that, you know, getting mainstream investing to take this up, we're struggling with the language that we've chosen?
So, Colin, I think I actually just yesterday, Government Securities and Exchange Board of India actually approved the social stock exchange program, where I have been able to convince the government to introduce impact investing as actually a term. So they have come up with social impact funds as a category, which was not there. It was social finance earlier, and nobody wanted to actually register a social venture fund. But I think the important thing is the moment you put a word social in front of an entrepreneur, the belief among the investors was the person is not interested in generating returns. That was actually the belief in 2010, 2011, 2012. Interestingly, a lot of entrepreneurs in India didn't want to be called social entrepreneur. And the reason was that because then investors will simply shun them. Over the last 10 years in India specifically, and I'm being very particular about India, we have been able to bridge the divide between impact investors and mainstream investors. So today, if you look at Avishkar's portfolio companies and you ask, who is my follow-on investor? It is the Axels, the Chirates, the Sequoias, the mainstream guys. And the reason is there is a serious belief amongst tech investors and mainstream investors that this complex social problems that are very, very large, like, for example, agriculture and farmers' income, financial inclusion, waste, water, sanitation. If there is an element of innovation and technology and scale, then there is a reason for them to participate because there is a huge chance that there may be an outsized return possible, specifically if somebody who understands that space is willing to take the first risk. And I think that change has happened in India. But if I go to Africa or if I go to Indonesia or if I go to Bangladesh or Sri Lanka, where we also invest, there is long distance to go for that gap to be bridged.
So now let me introduce Jen Braswell. Jen Braswell is the Director of Value Creation Strategies at CDC, focused on market building and advisory services in CDC priority impact areas, which are gender equality, climate change, job quality, and skills and leadership. Jen's emerged as a recognized leader in the area of gender finance and has led CDC's partnership with the 2X Challenge Initiative and the DFI Gender Finance Collaborative. So welcome, Jen. Let me start out. I mean, gender finance has sort of burst out as a hot new area of impact investing. But can you walk us through maybe the last two or three years of, you know, how much progress has been made in this very short time?
Great. Yeah. Thanks, Colin. It's a pleasure to be here and a particular pleasure to be here with you today, Vineet, particularly because you've been at the forefront of thinking about intentional investing to solve problems, deploying capital to actually address some of the challenges that we see worldwide. And that is what we've been doing in CDC and with our partners over the last 5 years, which is CDC's current five-year strategy period, in terms of becoming and thinking about how we can deploy our capital with a more intentional lens to look at some of the key developmental challenges that our markets experience, and to think through how the businesses in our markets can result and generate impacts in those areas, and how our capital can be deployed specifically to target those challenges. And so, as you said, Colin, one of the key areas we've been focusing on is the question about participation of women and empowerment of women in the private sector. And so in order to do that, we have to develop and think and have a framework for deciding how to define the right level of participation that for us indicates that a business is so-called gender smart. So we set off on this journey about 3 years ago, as you said, Colin, with several of our DFI peers in the space of development finance to create that framework, which has become the 2X criteria or the 2X investing framework. And the way that we think about it at CDC, and now I think it's becoming the standard, is to look at four key areas where women participate. So when we think, when we define gender lens investing, it is to meaningfully consider where and how women participate in our investments in order to decide whether this is an investment that can be supportive and produce the outcomes for women that we would like to produce. So we're solving the problem of gender gaps in our markets. And so we think about four areas. One of them is entrepreneurship and promoting and supporting more women as entrepreneurs. There is a huge finance gap for women who are starting up and owning businesses. So that's a key area we focus on. The second area is thinking about women as leaders. So promoting and supporting businesses to bring more women into leadership and decision-making, which we believe has a trickle-down and cascading positive effect on business decision-making. The third area is looking at women as workers and bringing more women into quality jobs and workforce. And then the fourth area is to support businesses and invest in businesses that, that meaningfully develop products and services to serve women. So these are the kind of core building blocks of our strategy.
Thanks, Jen. And Vineet, I mean, we've seen this in Vishkar's work as well, and I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts about how you've seen gender lens investing kind of rise. But I did note that in your most recent annual report, you highlighted, I think, 55 million women leaders that have been impacted by your investments. So what has this meant for Avishkar and how Avishkar approaches both making investments and their own operations inside Avishkar?
I think, Colin, I actually genuinely believe that microfinance has demonstrated that women are far more responsible and responsive towards their business activities. So when they are borrowers, they actually return money. And therefore, microfinance institutions do not proactively lend to men. They actually lend to women. Now, I was personally trying to say, so why do women return money? Are they better entrepreneurs? Or are they actually returning money because they have a higher purpose? When they're taking money, they feel more responsible. So I don't have an evidence to say that women are better entrepreneurs. I have not done any study, so I can't say they are better entrepreneurs. But I can surely say that they have a higher purpose. And that's why the money comes back. And they find ways to make it happen. And if those people with a higher purpose are converted into more successful or educated, coached into leadership positions and are actually made entrepreneurs and more capital is given to them, then higher purpose, which is what you require to change the world, impact, and better skills. If that is combined together, you will of course have a better world. And that's really the simple focus. And I'll tell you why I'm saying it. My wife gave me the first $2,000 for me to start. I had only $100, so she gave me $2,000 to start in Telecap. But she never assumed that she actually played any great role in Avishkar's formation. So if you have looked at our impact report, you would see a big photograph of her in the first page. And this is the first time in our 20-year history we have acknowledged my wife's contribution to Avishkar, simply because she said, but I didn't do anything. That was her belief. Now, I forced her to write her own story from her eyes because I could have written a different story. And asked her to see what sacrifices she made for us to reach here. And that story is what she narrated there. Now, this understatement, and I think Mamuna was telling me just before this call, that men will apply for a job if they think 15% they are capable or qualify for it. And women apply only when they think they are 90% capable or qualify for it. Now, we are actually only trying to bring the discrepancy out without knowing that statistic by using the way. And we therefore have seen Avishkar has massively benefited internally by having women actually being in leadership position. But at the same time, in our investee companies, you look at microfinance, we have massively benefited in terms of returns because millions of these women have allowed us to generate returns. So overall, from a very smart perspective, we are looking to play a more proactive role in having women in strong leadership positions, because just by sheer higher purpose that they bring to the table, they may actually create, help us create more successful and impactful.
And Vineet, I mean, gender lens investing is one of an increasing variety of these specialist impact themes. And the first two were probably, climate and ESG investing. But now we've got health equality, we have gender investing and many more. I'm curious, your view of what the role is of these kind of emerging specialist themes, whether they strengthen the impact investing argument or do they confuse the market? What are your thoughts about this?
You're absolutely right, Colin. Impact investing is a horizontal. It's not a vertical, it's a horizontal. And there will be specialized vertical that will emerge. For example, climate is a very specialized vertical, but within the climate, there are specialized vertical as well. So you can go to climate tech, or you can go to natural resource-based biomass-based sequestration. Now, you can't do actually climate tech and biomass-based sequestration investing together. They're completely different. One requires 20 years. One probably requires 7-8 years. One is very high risk. One is actually a natural process. So I think impact investing in some sense is essentially offering or giving people a choice to actually merge or mimic, in some sense, it mimics the mainstream investing. You can actually see the horizontal of impact investing, and you can see the horizontal of mainstream investing. And as I keep saying, our job is to convince the mainstream to become us instead of us to become mainstream.
And Jen, sort of the same question to you. And I want to point out that, I mean, we focused on gender lens investing, but as I said in the introduction, you have teams that work on 4 priority impact areas. So, I mean, what's the benefit of having these kind of deep dives in specialist impact areas for impact investors?
Well, I think, as Vineet said, he started with a simple proposition. I want to make the poor become rich. That was the problem that you were starting with. And as impact investing has evolved over the last 20 years, I think we've all been able to build the understanding that unless we apply specific lenses to our investment capital and try to solve the specific challenges that we see out there, we won't be able to go as far or deliver the level and the scale of outcomes that we'd like to see. And so that's why we have been thinking much more deeply over the last 5 years, I would say, about how to apply a kind of rigorous framework to think about the outcomes that we want to see. And I think the benefit of doing this with applying specific lenses, if let's say a climate finance lens, or looking specifically at investing with the goal to improve the quality of workforce, is that we can understand the difference that our capital makes over time. And we can learn from that. And therefore, we can refine the way that we invest, the mechanisms by which we make our investment decisions, and importantly, the way that we interact with and support our portfolio businesses post-investment to make changes and to ensure that they are making the decisions that will produce the outcomes and the solutions to the problems that we're trying to collectively solve.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jen.
A big thank you then to Vineet, to Jen, and to Colin for today's discussion. If you want to find out more about our Insight program of events, articles, and podcasts, there's a link to subscribe in the episode notes. So that's about it from us today. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back with a new episode very soon. See you then.